the third day of the week, work week anyway, and the third day this week with mixed prices in the grain markets. I think we see a trend there. But volatility remains off the charts in the livestock markets. Fortunately, sellers stayed out of the cattle markets, but they migrated back over to milk futures in the lean hog market.
Live from a womb-like basement studio via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Chris Swift from Swift Trading. And right after the news, buckle up for Bubba! Todd Bubba Horowitz from BubbaTrading.com. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now here's your pal, your host, Chip Flory.
Right, Davis.
Yeah, baby.
You must be feeling very comfortable there in your bunker.
It's getting weird down here, bro. It's getting weird.
Yeah, it sounds like it's getting a little weird. Oh, my goodness gracious.
We'll be
Welcome
fine.
Back to Agronomy Week.
Yes.
National Agronomy Week. We're celebrating it here on AgriTalk. Thank you so much to DeKalb Esgro Delta Pine for making it possible for us to celebrate and to shout out a little bit to some of the guys that are getting the job done.
Yeah.
One other
Keeping it clean while we're getting dirty.
Yeah.
Right?
There you go. One other thing that is starting to pick up some traction out there on Twitter is hashtag farm on.
Yes.
I love it.
I love it too. And the thing is, you know, you and I come from a generation way back in the caveman days where you used to have a camera to take a picture of anything.
Oh, yeah.
Now you've got a really, really nice camera in your pocket. No film, no nothing. You push a button and it goes off to... How do they send their pictures? How do they get them to us?
Well, there's a couple of ways to do it. What I would like people to do is to text the phrase farm on, one word, capital F, capital O-N, farm on, one word, but text that to 31313. And include a picture of what you're doing. Include a message out to the other farmers out there that are doing the job that they need to do.
Hey, look, I just found a possum between these bales. Let's have a picture.
Yeah.
Hey, look, you know, the kids are throwing corn out of the thing. Well, let's have a picture.
Mama cow just put my butt in the dirt.
We got to have a picture of that.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Or, of course, go to Twitter, hashtag farm on. And post your picture there. So it's really cool.
Okay.
It's a weird time, you guys. If we can do something like this to lift each other up, why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we do this?
We're all paddling.
I think it is outstanding. All right, man. We got Bubba standing by. Let's go ahead and get to the news quick.
Chip, the wheat market may be starting to build some weather risk into prices. Traders are watching the possibility of below freezing temperatures moving into the central U.S. this weekend, where the winter wheat crop is greening up. Also, drying trends across Europe are starting to take a few nicks out of yield potential there. And of course, restricted flow of milling quality wheat out of the Black Sea is providing underlying support for wheat prices. July hard red winter wheat was 5.25 cents higher at 4.85 1/4. July soft red firmed a penny to 5.48 1/2. July spring wheat gained 5.25 cents to close at 5.40 1/2. Chip.
Yeah, the July SRW market really performed pretty well today. I mean, it opened slightly higher, fell to lower levels on the day, and then came back. Now, we did close just below the opening range, which is a little bit concerning for that market for tomorrow. But all in all, it's trying. We are posting higher lows in this market right now.
Well, here we go on this. Ethanol production in the weekend of April 3 averaged 672,000 barrels per day. Chip, that's a new record low and is down an average of 168,000 barrels per day. Ethanol stocks surged 1.374 million barrels to a record 27.091 million barrels. That's thought to be full capacity for ethanol storage. Despite being at a record low, production is expected to continue to fall for the near term, erasing more demand for corn. May corn futures were a penny and a half lower at 3.30. July corn fell 1.75 to 3.35 1/2. December corn closed at 3.49 1/4, down 1.75 today, Chip.
Yeah, ethanol, it's the struggle is clearly for real right now, and you just wonder how much is going to recover and restart when we get things back looking close to normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, the U.S. is expected to pick up some demand for soybeans over the next several weeks, but much of the world has turned back to South America for supplies. Traders are debating bean usage ahead of Thursday's supply and demand report. On average, Chip, traders are looking for soybean carryover to be increased just 5 million bushels from last month to 430 million bushels, but the whisper number on bean carryover is inching up to the top end of the guess range at 475 million bushels. Yeah. May soybean futures a quarter of a penny lower, 854 and a half. July beans firmed 0.75 cents, 861 and 3/4. November bean futures closed at 868 today.
Okay. Yep. I think we might have lost Davis there real quick. We're going to talk to Cattle Fundamentals with Chris Swift in the middle of today's show. April live cattle futures jumped the $4.50 limit for a second straight day to 92.82 and a half, and August cattle gained 287 and a half to 92.20. April feeders finished the day up $4.95 at 119.87 and a half. April lean hogs buck lower was all 43.12 and a half. July hogs fell 92 and a half cents to 56.85. Let's bring in Todd Horowitz, BubbaTrading.com. Bubba, how you doing, man? Everything okay?
I'm all good, baby. I'm here. I'm healthy. I'm in quarantine. Good. What the hell are you?
Good. So yesterday we had the Dow up solidly at about this time, and we gave those gains up. Here we are 740 points higher right now. I sure hope we don't see back-to-back days of giving those gains up. That would send a bad message.
Well, I think you might be able to see it. I'm not, you know, listen, it's so quiet. It's hard to make any real call in general as to what's going to happen. But, you know, the markets are dead. Okay. There's no volume, as you can see. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, they're not very strong, but you do have a number of things that, you know, people are looking at trying to get in and trying to figure out, you know, the right spot. But, you know, again, I think we're, you know, well overvalued. And, you know, I do expect the lows to be tested that were made back, you know, a couple of weeks ago. So again, to me, this is just an air pocket pushing them higher, lack of anything to do, and people are chasing them around. I think this is more the fear of missing out, but I do expect to see more selling coming.
Okay. All right. So when you say more selling coming, test the lows or go through them?
Well, I think we could go through them. I mean, I think there's a lot more room to the downside in general. Okay. That's what I'm looking at. And again, is it going to happen? I can't predict that far out, but certainly it would be no surprise to see a pretty healthy sell off and to take the lows out.
Yeah. Okay.
We've still got, you know, a lot of information coming out. You know, now I'm not a fundamental guy, but you know, the earnings are going to be brutal. The economy isn't going to come back in 1 second, even if we get the country back open again. So there's going to be a lot of issues out there that are not going to create enough revenue. So,
I was just going to ask you about it. It's going to be another process that we have to go through. It's not going to be, boom, we're back, baby. It's going to be a process to bring it back.
100%. And that's why I think that, you know, we keep missing the point. But, you know, the free money out there, those things are, you know, continue to bring in money. But, you know, again, we'll see. Again, I'm not going to predict. I mean, obviously, you know, I believe overall markets go up. 8.5%. But, you know, I believe that probably going to see a pretty significant thaw and a pretty serious thaw. And that's what we'll be. Oh, my muses are playing my song.
Yep. Thanks, Bubba. We'll talk to you next week. That's Todd Horowitz, BubbaTrading.com. Chris Swift up next. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields. AgriTalk is paying tribute to farmers, agronomists, and all of agriculture chasing the dream this agronomy week. Our coverage is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgro, and Delta Pine. Learn more at agronomyweek.com. All right, speaking of that, let's go ahead and listen to this industry spotlight. Joining us now is Nicole Steckline. She is a DeKalb Asgrow agronomist here in Iowa. Nicole, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Hanging in there.
Good, good, good. Where are you located, Nicole?
So I am located just east or west of Dubuque, Iowa.
Okay. Right there along Highway 20, huh? What county are you in?
So right now I am where Dubuque, Jackson, and Jones County meet. We got the trifecta going on.
Gotcha, gotcha. All right. Hey, what are conditions like over there in the hills?
So we got a little bit of rain last night, so depending where you're located at, you're shut down for the day. For the most part, the top couple of inches are dry, so if you see guys rolling, there is dust flying, so the anhydrous is sealing up really nice. There's a lot of that kind of activity going on right now. But underneath that, it's still a little bit sticky. So in my opinion, a lot of the deep tillage, especially in the clay side hills, we should maybe wait a little bit longer on. But any of the lighter soils, some of the sands and the sand loams, yeah, those are actually dry down to about 5 to 6 inches. So, you know, primary tillage in those soil types are probably okay to roll right now. But any of the heavier soil types, it's a little too sticky underneath for that yet.
Yeah, and Nicole, with the temperatures that are forecast for your area here over the next week or so, it's going to cool off again. Maybe hold off a little bit on putting some seed corn in the ground?
Oh, I absolutely would. So when I look to my north geographies, you know, those soil temperatures haven't even reached 50 degrees yet.
Right.
And then we've got the cool temperatures, and we haven't even hit the insurance date either.
Right.
So, you know, you can't plant last year's crop this year. So, you know, let's keep our head on our shoulders. When I look to my southern geography, so along the Missouri-Iowa border, you know, they're just getting to 50 degrees right now. So, you know, those are going to cool down with the temperatures going forward. We aren't going to stay at that 50 degrees for long.
Excellent. Nicole, stick around. I want to talk more with you when we come back to wrap up the show, okay?
All right. Sounds good.
That is Nicole Steckline. She is an agronomist for DeKalb and Asgrow here in Iowa. All right. Thanks so much, Nicole. Hey, Chris Swift must be around. Let's bring him in here. Chris Swift, Swift Trading Company. Chris, thank you so much for making time for us today, buddy.
Absolutely, Chip. Glad to be here, sir.
Okay, now I'm going to invite this. You can call in 855-4TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us, and when you do, include hashtag ag. We're talking the message. Chris, I'd love to answer your questions, but I'm telling you, cattle guys, keep it civil. Keep it respectful. And if not, I got a mute button. Okay. Chris, we've never seen anything like this.
No, we have not. This is historical at multiple levels right now, from packing capacity, consumer changes, the number of cattle on feed. We are going to make dramatic changes. We're going to create marketing holes and create some walls in the future.
Yeah. Okay, let's start, I think, at one of the things that the market's really factored in, and just they factored in just the threat of having a plant closed down or of slowing down the line speed and reducing our capacity that way, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And, excuse me, the one thing that we're the most anxious to find out is to what level did they reduce packing capacity to? So if we knew that there was going to be a 15 or 20% shortage of employees, then we would know where to move other kill facilities or how to move animals into other kill facilities to make up that difference. I think where we're most concerned about is we don't know to what level that packing capacity will drop to. And then we do know that by widening out the chain, the length of the people on the chain there, it slows that chain speed. So even if you were to either increase or decrease the actual work population there, you still now got a slower chain speed due to spreading those employees out across the line.
Yeah. And when we do that, Chris, and talk in percentages here, how much do you have to slow it down to have a a meaningful, a significant, a market impacting influence on prices?
You know, I don't know, because we've seen so much fluctuation between boxes and the live price and even the retail price. I'm not sure that that can be quantified. Okay. I'll say it kind of like what's been going on in my mind is, prior to the COVID-19 outbreak, we were killing approximately 630,000 head a week. And we believed at that time we were taxing the beef market just a little bit. We were begging the grocery store to increase features and try to move a little bit of that beef, because we also knew that coming in April and May, we were going to have elevated slaughter inventory due to the lower weight placements that we had September, October, and November of 19. So we had lower weight placements then. Those cattle took longer to grow, and we were going to have more cattle to have to process in the April-May time frame. So we were killing 630. Then we ramped it up to 675,000 about 2 weeks ago when the huge demand for hamburger meat came out. And by that time, we were still running at 100% processing capacity. Right. In the next 2 weeks, you drop that processing capacity to what we don't know yet. And once we find that bottom of where it is, then everything will be working forward to try to improve that. But I think the biggest question marks for the market right now are, to what level does packing capacity drop down to? How many more cattle do we still have to slaughter out there that were unable to get killed in this last 2 to 3 week time frame?
Okay. Yeah. And once we get that number, then it's going to be a question of how quickly we can get caught back up on marketings. Is that right?
Well, no, not necessarily, because you've got a consumer and a food service sector. You have two more sectors that we do not know where the bottom is for those sectors. So we talk about the food service, and we believe that if we have lost 80% of our food service to dining in and just to casual dining, a certain percentage of that will come back, and that will help the beef market. But we're not real sure that 100% of the consumers will be ready to go back. So there's a slow time process between now and maybe the next 2 to 3 months as we form new habits. And as we form these new habits due to the situation we're under, then we can kind of see what we need to do in the processing side of it to meet those new demands.
Chris, you know, and the what's going to make this really hard is, we know that there is a segment of the population that as soon as we get the green light to go ahead, get back close to normal, there's a portion of our population that is going to jump at the chance, and they're going to get out in the restaurants, and they're going to, it's going to be like pre-COVID-19. But there is a significant portion of our population that is going to be very slow to return to their normal life. This is going to be a long, drawn out recovery on the restaurant and food service side, isn't it?
No doubt whatsoever. And I guess the biggest things that I look forward to now coming this fall is, you will have a reduction in the Christmas office parties, where we once enjoyed large gatherings and getting together. That will be shunned upon some. The most wonderful thing in the world is to go visit grandma and grandpa during the holidays, and there will be less of that, just because nobody wants to bring that into grandma, grandpa's house and infect them. So, yes, this is a maximum change in everything that you can imagine. And we've got several months to go before we work out and see where consumers want to land and how quickly they can go back. Clearly, we have the money. I think that the government has done an excellent job at providing the stimulus packages out there that we need. What we really need is some psychological impacts. We need a vaccine
confidence
found, a cure found of some kind or another, or in some manner that if we continue to practice good health issues here, then we stand a less likely chance of contracting the virus.
Right. Yeah, I tell you, getting our confidence back is just as important as anything else. And we've talked about it on the show here a little bit. If we would have a medical driven end to the crisis, in other words, I can go get a shot, Chris, and I know that I'm not going to be at risk of contracting COVID-19, well, then my confidence is pretty doggone high, and I'm going to go out and things are going to get back to normal pretty quick. But if we stay in this wait it out mode, then we've got a real issue to deal with. We're talking with Chris Swift from Swift Trading Company. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the influence of the dairy industry on beef. That's next on AgriTalk.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on for our family and yours.
It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers first thing today. The White House is working on plans to restart the U.S. economy. The White House is developing plans to get the U.S. economy back in action. The White House has also requested $251 billion more for small business loans. China releases more reserve soybeans to tide over major crushers. The Brazilian meat and poultry processors will likely need to import corn soon. It looks like it's going to be for their corn needs May forward. Kazakhstan signals it will increase its wheat and flour export quotas. That is, in months ahead, they will increase it. And lawmakers are pushing for relief for the biofuel sector. A group of 15 senators, including Senator Grassley, sent a letter to Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue suggesting that some CCC funds could be flowed to the biofuel industry.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is paying tribute to farmers, agronomists, and all of agriculture chasing the dream this agronomy week. Our coverage is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgrow, and Delta Pine. Learn more at agronomyweek.com. We're all chasing the dream, no question about it. Let's go back and have another industry spotlight with Nicole. Joining us again is Nicole Steckline. She is a DeKalb Asgrow agronomist in Eastern Iowa. Nicole, when you are starting out and starting with a new customer, new farmer that you haven't worked with before, what do you want them to know about you?
Honestly, I want them to know I care. That's number one on my priority list, because building relationships with anybody, you need to have common ground so they know I'm passionate about what I do. And the next thing is I need them to know that I care, because nothing makes better recommendations than a person that cares about their operation. And if you care about it, you can ask questions and learn about it, and then that's how you end up making the best recommendations possible.
Good stuff. What do you need to know from that customer?
Oh, the list is too long to go on in this short conversation. But, I mean, the biggest thing is probably their goals and then their management style, because everybody has a different management style, and that's going to change both your hybrid recommendations as well as how to manage those hybrids as well.
Excellent. So what does it look like when it works, when it really works, Nicole, that relationship between you and a farmer, what does it look like?
Communication and trust, for the most part. Communication on both sides of it, so if they have questions, they aren't scared to call and ask those questions. And then trust that whatever answer I give to them, I have everybody's, I have everybody's best in mind. And that I trust that they're going to go out and do their best as well.
That's so awesome, Nicole. Thank you so much for making time for us today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, happy Agronomy Week.
Yes, all right. That is Nicole Steckline, DeKalb Asgrow agronomist in Iowa. All right, thank you, Nicole. Good stuff there. Let's get back to the conversation with Chris Swift from Swift Trading Company. I teased at the end of the last segment there, Chris, that I wanted to talk about the influence of the dairy industry, or what it could have on beef trade here going forward. I mean, it stinks in the cattle market right now. It might stink worse in the dairy trade. The supply chain disruption that they're going through in dairy is something like I've never seen before. If we start getting into a bunch of liquidated cow situation here, Chris, that's going to be tough.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we're preparing for. You prepare for the worst and hope for the best. But in every case, stress always exposes weakness. And we know that the dairy industry has been under stress for a long time. And there were several times over the last 2 to 3 years that I really anticipated them having a dairy cow liquidation, and state and federal subsidy programs came in just enough to keep everybody afloat. And now since we've had two of the big major processors, Deans and Borden's, to either be transferred to a different home or go out with some of their processing manufacturing, it just makes the dairy industry that much weaker. So now where you have this issue that has come about, it will, I don't think there'll be any kind of subsidy that can be produced that will hold on to those marginal producers.
Yeah.
Those ones that weren't quite up to making a big financial means to it, or they had such high input costs that the low milk price begins to really expose that.
Man, I'm afraid you're probably right on that, Chris. And if, you know, some of these co-ops out there are starting to offer some opportunities to dairy producers to get some of their dividends back and to get out of the business, but those cows can't change an address. They got to go to market.
Yeah. They do, and whereas we've seen in years past where there's some lateral changes where herds maybe just get transferred to a new ownership, those cows continue in the milking process. Yeah. I think this year, for the majority of 2020, a lot of those cattle will end up going to market and never be seen on the supply line again.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Chris, one of the most frustrating things for a beef producer to see happen in this whole process, and you mentioned it in the last segment too here, was that relationship between the boxes, the cash bids, and the futures price.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen anything like it. Can you explain, what are your thoughts on how it happened, why it happened?
Well, from a business standpoint, you have quite a bit of production on the side of the live cattle. You have a processing that has a throttle to it, and prior to the COVID, that throttle was about three-fourths of the way open. Because we knew that we could kill 645 to 650,000 head a week, but we were only killing 630. So I think that what you see when the consumer had to change, and the food service sectors there just literally shut down overnight, it took 2 weeks to adjust all of that product or a portion of that product that was going to food service to go to the consumer side at the grocery store. So both the consumer and the processor had to make dramatic changes in a literally overnight time frame to begin to produce the product for the consumer, where he's going to consume it at a different place and purchase it at a different place. And all of those unknowns and all of that money that cannot be transferred into the cash market due to just lack of ability is then processed into the futures market. And a majority of what you're seeing trading is not necessarily cattle or milk or anything. It's money. You're seeing that money being traded because the price ranges are so wide and the fears are so great. People are having to make decisions based upon very poor information from everyone out there because nobody has been through this situation before. Mm-hmm. And even with the 9/11 attacks, that's probably the closest thing that we can see to hampering a consumer psychology. The financial crisis was bad, but it didn't really hamper consumer psychology. The 9/11 tax, the unknowns, that hampered people's psychology. That's what this is. So a little bit of time will help things, and we've already noticed that probably after today's limit move in the markets, I would dare to say you'll probably start to narrow some of these price ranges and maybe trade in a range for the next week or two until we sort some of these things out and get a better idea of where the consumer is going to continue to eat their meals and if the food service sector has any opportunity to come back, you know, sooner rather than later.
Okay. Chris, there's calls for some significant changes to how this cattle market functions out there. And when you get into a crisis like we've been in, the coronavirus crisis, and we see these kinds of extreme reactions in markets like we've seen in cattle, what's the greatest risk?
Well, that's a good question, Chip. I don't know that I have an answer for that. I think that risk is around every corner, and that attempting to manage that risk, we all fall very short. As good as we think we are, we all fall very short of being able to manage that risk. But I think this is where decisions have to be made and say, are we going to protect the farm, or are we going to continue to do business as we always do and jeopardize the farm under these conditions? And what I'm trying to boil down to is, as difficult as futures and options may be to use, it is the only tool that we have other than the cash market to disseminate risk into. So as I have done for the last 30-some-odd years that I've been a broker, I'm always an advocate for using futures and options to help you manage your price risk. And the unfortunate of it is those that don't stand a chance. And those that do stand probably a 50-50 chance, because they're still going to make errors. They're not going to pick the bottom. They're not going to pick the top. But if we can take out something in the middle, that's what might be help us to hold on to the farm for another year until times improve.
Yeah, good stuff there, Chris. You know, one thing that I would ask this industry to do, and I don't know if I'm in a position to ask the entire industry to do anything, but one thing I would ask them to do is just really think about any mandated changes in how cattle trade happens and how beef trade happens in this country. Think long and hard about it, because boy, there's always unintended consequences to changes. And if we're going to be making any permanent adjustments to this cattle market, we better identify what those unintended consequences might be, what they could be, before we do any of those changes. Yes?
No, there's no doubt about that. And I'm not the one to ask about that, because I just don't know. I've tried many, many times to sort out what would be the best way to do it. And there never seems to be a fair way where everybody gets what they want. And, of course, a lot of that has to do still with production. You know, if you honestly want to look at it, the United States overproduces everything. And it's just the honest truth of it. Let's look at corn prices and ethanol, and we have been under $4 a bushel for 5.5 years. We've been under $140 for fat cattle for 4 years because we've got more product on hand than the consumer can consume.
Chris, I always feel, every time we talk, I feel kind of a calm, because I feel like I've heard a lot of logic over the last few minutes in this conversation. I want to thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate that, Chip, and I want to try to do everything I can to help everybody get through this. And, you know, anybody that's listening out there, never hesitate to give us a ring, and we'll at least give you an opinion.
Happy Easter to you, Chris.
Thank you. Same to you, Chip.
All right, that's Chris Swift, Swift Trading Company. Davis and I will be back to wrap up AgriTalk in a minute.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
All right, Davis. Here we are. Let's make our way into the end of today's second hour of AgriTalk. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That's Davis.
Yeah, huh?
And what a conversation with Chris. He's thought about these things. He came right out and said he's never lived through anything like this, but he's relying on some experiences that he's had in the past and trying to figure out the best way to manage risks that cattle producers face going forward. And it's not an easy job right now.
Well, and I would draw from, was it the first hour just today when the phrase came up, you know, don't change your plans in the middle of a blizzard.
Yeah.
And him as much experience, knowledge, and, you know, everything that he's got and can bring to the table, on some things for him to say, you know what, I just don't know how that's going to shake out just yet. I think that's extremely wise.
Yeah. It really is.
It doesn't necessarily get us any closer to any answers.
Well,
if
now,
anything,
wait.
Maybe it distances us from bad decisions made, you know, ocean or in the spur of the moment here in the blizzard. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. What you're saying is if it can keep us from making a bad decision, don't make the decision in the middle of a snowstorm. I get that. And yep. Yeah.
It's come to this.
Yeah. I love it. It does point out though that as we've gone through this process and we have factored in maybe not the worst case scenario quite yet in these markets. And I'll admit, when I sit here and I look at what April live cattle have done or June live cattle have done and the bounce that we've got off of the lows that we posted in those markets, those lows are above. And I'm not rubbing salt in a wound. I'm not giving anybody fresh ideas. These thoughts have been out there. I'm just observing. We've not gone down and tested those lows that Kerry Artak has talked about, that from a chart perspective, from a technical perspective,
mm-hmm.
would make sense that we would go down and test those lows. So I would just suggest to everybody in this cattle market that if you think we factored in the worst case scenario, good. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine.
Right.
But just realize that maybe we haven't, and there could be another round of selling to come into this market at some point. I'm trying to remember the name of the caller that called in the other day when we were talking about some of these issues, and he brought up the question, could we see, say, a spike in retail demand every 2 weeks as people come back to the store and restock on some of that beef? I think maybe that. And we said yes. You know, you cannot rule that out. I wonder if we're not starting to see some signs of that happening. The any strength that we're seeing in the box beef market has been chalked up to the idea that retailers are starting to take advantage of a slight setback in box beef prices, so that they've got some product in place that they can feature when we get to the end of this and we see the green light on the economy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be premature for a lot of those retailers out there. I really do. I think maybe we are seeing some demand come in spurts.
You and I are free market guys, perhaps to a fault. Doesn't it seem, I don't know, maybe there won't be a green light. Maybe the green light will come from the consumer side. And hey, you know, we're out there buying. We're still buying. There's still demand for this product here. Wait a second. Maybe we can get the economy back up and rolling, and it starts from the consumer end division rather than coming from the top down.
I got bad thoughts in my head right now, Davis. I think that probably will be. If this goes on another 3 weeks and we are told to stay home,
right,
that's going to start to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the enforcement of the stay home rules,
ugh,
how far they take that,
right,
whether it be at a federal, a state, a county, a local level, mm-hmm. how far our law enforcement takes that is going to be. You know what I'm saying? We can't get into a situation where because somebody wants to go see a movie or a group of people want to go see a movie, that we're getting into clashes with the law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to be smarter than that. We've got to be smarter than that on both sides.
Right.
On both sides.
Nope.
I mean, when you look at how many constitutional rights we are seeing getting picked away at right now because of some of this stuff, Davis. I mean,
let's call them temporarily suspended.
It puts tears in my eyes.
I know. There is an element of, oh my gosh, the end of this is unseen yet, and it could potentially be very frightening and be a completely different type of America.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think there's some that hope that that's true.
Yeah, there are. Can't let them win.
Can't let the bastards win is right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Scary times.
I don't think I said bastards. Did I say bastards? I think you edited me there on the fly.
I might have. Easy. Oh, I'm telling you, you guys, we're going to be all right. We're going to get through this. The National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook. This is for April 14th through the 18th. It's got high odds of below 90% odds of below normal temperatures in that forecast, with below normal precipitation as well for April 14th through the 18th. So,
well, never mind then. If there's no precipitation, what's the point?
The point is the safest place for the seed corn right now might be in the bag. All right. Yes. Hey, thank you. Thank you so much, Davis. And for Davis and for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening today. Tomorrow morning, former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack, J.P. Morgan's Ann Deignan, and tomorrow afternoon, Seth Meyer from the University of Missouri, right here on AgriTalk.